This is Mark Steiner. We're about to talk with Sherlyn Ifill, who is President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And Sherlyn, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. I love to be on your show.
I'm fascinated by these two pieces you wrote, one for The Root and one for The Baltimore Sun. Let me start local and lead into what you wrote in The Root, because to me they're deeply connected. When a police commissioner who is highly respected makes a statement that has been interpreted many ways by different people about the deaths in Baltimore, 235 people, what you probed in your piece is something that looks at the depth of what this really means beyond just the conversation of what he meant or didn't mean, but what policies are in effect and what's affecting real lives in Baltimore is what we're missing in this conversation.
Yeah, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for our new police commissioner, and I, you know, as I say in the piece, he deserves the opportunity to implement policies that are going to make real change in Baltimore, and I'm very hopeful that that will happen. You know, the concern is that we not play into what I think, unfortunately, is not something, you know, Commissioner Batts has introduced, but has been a longstanding view, not only in Baltimore, but in many American cities, that, you know, as long as the murder rate is those people, however you define them, whether you're saying people in gangs, people in the drug trade, young African-American men, and not, as Commissioner Batts said, everyday citizens, we can kind of tamp down our outrage. We can breathe a little bit easier because it's not us. And in the piece, you know, I'm trying to suggest that it is us, that they are us also. And that, you know, the snuffing out of these young lives, even people who, you know, have made poor choices and who are involved in the drug trade or who are involved in gangs, they don't make those choices in the abstract. They make those choices and enter that life within a context. And all of us who are honest with ourselves know that the context that we present to young people, struggling young people, poor young people in the city, is one that doesn't make very many choices available to them for positive outcomes. I'm not suggesting that they don't bear responsibility for their lives, but, you know, murder is not the punishment for being a drug dealer, or at least shouldn't be in a civilized society. So, you know, I try to suggest that if we're thinking about the future of our city, we should remember that every one of these people who are killed, whether it's the 7-month-old baby who was the first homicide
right.
of 2013, or the 22-year-old man who was shot in the head in a drive-by in Federal Hill, who was the last murder of 2013. They all have families, and every one of these killings reverberates out through the community. You may not care about, you know, the drug dealer, but he has a mother, and he has siblings, and he has cousins, and he has children, and their lives and how they interact and conduct themselves in this city is going to be affected by that violence. And so we can't assume that the violence somehow doesn't affect everyday citizens simply because most of the people being killed are people who may or alleged to be involved in illegal activity. And I just think it's a mistake for us to comfort ourselves, as I thought we were being encouraged to do, with the idea that it's them and not most of us.
And I think this goes to the heart of, to me, how these two pieces that you wrote, one for The Root, one for The Sun, are connected. Because you talk about the policies that have to be put in place in a city like Baltimore or any other city to address the issues that we face that are not in place in most cities in America mm-hmm. and not in Baltimore. But they also have to do with what we focus on. We
yeah.
get into the what we think Commissioner Batts meant, and kind of making this into a personal attack, to me is connected to our obsession with things like the Duck Dynasty or the other kind of racist things that happen at the end of the year that take precedent over our dialogue as opposed to talking about what the real issues are that we're facing and how to make that the forefront of our discussion.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and that's why I wrote The Root piece. I mean, after, you know, 2 weeks of hearing people talk about you know, someone on a reality show and the comments they made and what their view was about Jim Crow or what their view is about gay people, you know, in a period of time when we have so many pressing civil rights issues that we have to deal with, we need a fix to the Voting Rights Act. You know, my lawyers were down in Baker County, Georgia this summer, where, you know, the plan was after the Supreme Court's decision in the Shelby County case to close 5 of the 6 polling places in the county, requiring poor black people to drive 25 miles to vote. We had to get down there and deal with that. You know, we're dealing on the ground with real issues that relate to disenfranchisement and the ability of minority people to participate as full citizens in this society. And those are the issues we need to turn our attention to. You know, the Batts issue, it's not about Batts. As I said, many people in Baltimore, long before his arrival, and indeed, you know, much of the way we've approached the issue of the murder rate in Baltimore has really had underlying it this idea that, you know, if we can just make sure that, you know, average, middle-class, upstanding, law-abiding people, you know, aren't the victims of crime, then, you know, we can breathe a sigh of relief. And I talk about, you know, that in the piece. So it's not an attack on Batts, who, as I said, I have tremendous respect for. It's really about focusing us where we need to be focused. And when we spend lots of time worrying about, you know, what someone on Depp Dynasty said, he's not in control of public policy. He doesn't have the levers of our, you know, economic policy at his hand. He doesn't control criminal justice policy. He's not responsible for mass incarceration. He's not a school teacher. He's not the chancellor of the school system. He doesn't have that power. He's an entertainer. And for us to take all of our collective outrage and energy and focus it on that individual seems to me really misplaced, and sometimes explains why we're not more effective in mobilizing ourselves to make real and effective change, because we take our eye off the ball. And the piece I wrote in The Root was basically, you know, a call to, you know, focus, a call to discipline, which is how I describe it in the piece, that if we're to be successful in 2014, if we're to have comprehensive immigration reform, if we're to have a fix to the Voting Rights Act, if we are to really take advantage of this moment when people on the right and the left are seeing that mass incarceration has gone too far and that our criminal justice policies have to be changed and made more sane, if we're to take advantage of that moment in 2014, then we can't allow all of our energy to be expended worrying about someone on reality TV. And I think that's the challenge that's before us. You know, we're coming up on, in 2014, the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education, the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer.
Right.
You know, these are. If we're not simply to engage in ceremonial commemoration, you know, but real and true honoring of the sacrifice and effectiveness of those who fought for those, you know, victories, then, you know, we have to really come correct. We have to really come with our eye on the prize, with real focus and discipline, with a set of goals and the willingness to apply ourselves to the achievement of those goals. And I think, you know, when we worry about, you know, what did he mean when he said what he said, and what, you know, what about the guy who said this on TV or the person who put this up on Twitter, and then we all, you know, thousands of people comment on it. And as I say in The Root piece, you know, the more people tweeted their outrage about the Duck Dynasty's comments than called their congressperson to demand a fix to the Voting Rights Act.
So, and I was about to quote that piece in your piece. I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, I think that when we live in a culture that is fueled by the entertainment industry in many ways, and what dominates our press in today's world. So how do you see, as a leader of one of the major civil rights organizations in America, getting people to open up and listen and to what's happening, whether you're talking about the anniversaries that are taking place or the 10-7 splits you wrote about on the U.S. About the in what
crack,
was that?
Crack powder cocaine.
Right.
Split. Yeah.
Those issues, voting rights, the question of the economic inequality in America, these are really going to grab. Should be grabbing our country, but they're in the back burner. They're in the news for a day, and they're gone. So it's up to us in some way to change that, to push that.
You're absolutely right, Mark. And, you know, I should tell you, I wrote these two pieces. I'm technically on vacation, you know.
Right, technically.
But, you know, I felt compelled to write them because you're absolutely right. The burden, I'm not absolving my organization or any civil rights organization or leaders or activists from responsibility and complicity, you know, in what I think is some of the problem. we have to be in communication and dialogue with the community. You know, and by communication and dialogue, I don't mean that we're just talking to them. I mean we're also listening. And that dialogue has to be consistent. It's very hard to do, but it is actually necessary because, you know, what I've noted the way I generally tend to engage in this kind of public debate is, you know, the debate happens for a while and I kind of stay out of it. and then I do try to say, okay, now we've, you know, exhausted ourselves for a week. Can we talk about what's real? You know, I try to step in at that moment. And I'm pleased to see that the response is always really positive. You know, people say, oh, wow, yeah, you know what, you're right. You know, that was interesting and kind of a little bit fun, but you know, thanks for reminding us. So I do think the responsibility is on people to do that, but I do think it's more than that. I do think it's the respectful, you know, dialogue and communication, the idea that there are kind of leaders somewhere out there and then there's a community. I'm not buying that. You know, I think that we are supposed to be talking to each other and working together. And over the last year since I've been leading the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, you know, I've spoken to audiences of 20,000. You know, I've spoken at the Delta Convention. I've spoken at, you know, all kinds of events with, you know, auditoriums and rooms full of people. And then I go into people's homes, and people just want to invite people to their house, and I'll come in and talk at house parties. You know, I'll come and talk to small community groups. Because I really believe that the connection and the dialogue is so important, and it allows me not to just speak, it allows me to listen and to hear what is going on. How, you know, even when people disagree with me, I'm excited to hear the disagreement and to wrestle it out a little bit. So I think that the level of communication to compete with the, you know, the entertainment industry and the way in which the entertainment industry has kind of become, frankly, our press, really requires us to step up our level of communication. It's exhausting, but it's absolutely essential. The people have to trust you, you know, to reach out to them. They have to trust that you're going to listen. And you got to speak to the moment. So that's why, you know, I do try to write, and I am on Twitter, and I do, you know, I do try to do those pieces also because I can't be in person everywhere. But I do try to make sure that I'm in communication with the community, that I'm talking with the people in my church about what they think about what's going on. And that's really the only way to keep people focused and to make sure people have the information so they can say, yeah, I heard the Duck Dynasty thing. That's really interesting. But did you know next week is the vote on, do you know what I mean? Like that,
right.
You know, so I take responsibility, and we sometimes fail at that, you know, because we're not really hardwired to be particularly good at it. We're learning to be better at it. And it also is extremely resource intensive to maintain that level of communication. But it's absolutely what we have to do.
Because when you look at things like you wrote about very intensely here, the Blewett case, which is a really important case, did you say maybe it's coming to the Supreme Court, and no matter what the Supreme Court does and what your lawyers can or cannot do, on this year that's the 50th anniversary of these incredible moments that happened in our history, fighting for civil rights after 64, the Freedom Summer and the Brown v. Board, you know, it's figuring out a way for groups like yours and large organizations to continue to connect to the Dream Defenders of Florida, the Moral Mondays in North Carolina, the people in Baltimore City who are standing up, United Workers, to fight for poor people in Baltimore. To make those connections is where it's going to happen.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I am such a huge fan of Reverend Barber, who is the North Carolina state head of the NAACP, who's really been the leader of the Moral Mondays movement. I mean, this mass mobilization in North Carolina and a mobilization, you know, in coalition of black people and, you know, women activists and LGBT activists and just all coming together to say enough and to protest against, you know, the real kind of right-wing takeover of that state and the retrenchment of, you know, rights and opportunities that, that you know, North Carolinians had fought so hard for. And, you know, the Dream Defenders, Philip Agnew, he knows. I just adore this young man because I really believe that the mobilization that they've developed in Florida, that their discipline, their consistency in the light of the verdict after the Trayvon Martin case is really, really powerful. If you haven't, you know, kind of heard him speak, you should. And it's not just about, you know, Philip Agnew. It's about his whole team of young people who are so focused in Florida. So, you know, I believe, just as you believe, that, like, that's how it's going to happen. It's going to be that connection to people on the ground and to encourage that mobilization on the ground. And I've been very consistent about that. You know, groups spring up and they're doing great stuff. I want them to know that the nation's premier kind of civil rights legal organization, yes, we encourage you, do that. Like, that's important. We recognize that litigation, you know, is not the whole answer. We can't solve everything in the courtroom. And our greatest courtroom victories, you know, happen when there's also a push happening outside the courtroom. And that was true 50 years ago, 60 years ago, so much more true today, you know, when we're in the age of the 24-hour news cycle and the internet and all the communication, and it all has to work together. So I do think that it is so important to continue to recognize the need for organization and mobilization around issues. And we don't have to agree on strategy for every issue, which is the other thing. You know, I think we all keep thinking that there's going to be some giant civil rights meeting at some convention center in which we all vote and agree on the strategy.
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Okay? In case people don't know, I'm here to tell you, it's not going to happen. You know, but what we do is we work in coalition with each other. I work in coalition with all of the major civil rights organizations, with the Latino organizations, with the Asian American organizations. We work in coalition with one another. And that means we stay on the same page. We don't kick the chair out from under one another. We recognize our goals are the same. And we recognize that sometimes it's good to have multiple and even disparate strategies as we try to, you know, reach the same goal. Because we all want equality. We all want opportunity. We all want real economic development in marginalized communities. We all want that. You know, we all want access to true quality education that will not only prepare our young people to be good citizens, but will also prepare them to participate in the economy, that will allow them to have, you know, to be able to support their families and have a real meaningful lives in ways that don't dehumanize them. So we all want that. And it's okay, you know, if sometimes we disagree about how we're going to get there, as long as we don't undercut each other. And that's what it means to work in coalition. So I'm very, very encouraged about where we're going in 2014, but I get a little discouraged and a little concerned when I see us kind of getting distracted. All the momentum we developed after the, you know, verdict in the Trayvon Martin case, after the voting rights case, March on Washington, and then to spend the last 3 weeks of the year focused on Duck Dynasty, you know, is a little sobering.
Sherilyn Leifel is president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, who wrote the piece in The Root called Forget Duck Dynasty. There are important civil rights battles to fight. And in the Baltimore Sun, wrote an op-ed about the city murder rate should outrage even everyday citizens. And you're right, and it's going to allow us to kick off a conversation about just how to do that with our next guests. Sherilyn Leifel, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Mark, and I just love being on your show. Take care.
Thank you, you too. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show. Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break.